Carmelite. Revs up. And we are off. A good start from Morbidelli from pole. Rossi did not get away well. Here comes Miller on the Ducati. But what a lightning start from Franco Morbidelli on the Yamaha.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 646. I'm one of your hosts, Skyler Vicroy, and joining me today, as ever, is Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going, dude?
It's good. It's good to be back home, off the road for a little bit. Nice. Had good racing this weekend as well. Very calm. The boys, I'm proud of them. So let's talk about it.
Yeah, talk about it. But before we do, we got to get back to a little bit of tradition. I actually made it to the store today, Jim. So without further ado... All right, so we're switching it up. It is the fall, Jim, and when it comes to the fall, you got to switch to a different beer. Hazy's, they're going to take it best. Right now, during the fall, it's Oktoberfest. So we're going to hit the Oktoberfest lines. I don't mess with the pumpkin beers too much. I'll probably grab one or two. But we go from Oktoberfest, and then it really hits its stride. We go to the winter beers, and that's when all the spicy stuff starts coming out, the dark ales, and ooh. Oh, that is where your boy gets loose in the beers, let me tell you.
Oh, we're going to have some sort of like stopwatch clock thing or something that tells us when you're going to be too loopy to do the show or something.
Well, today should be interesting.
You might have to have a sit-down penalty top, or you might have to take the long lap penalty here at some point.
For real, because this is actually number two today. I wanted to try it out before the show to see if – because sometimes the Oktoberfest, if you get them early in the season, some of the manufacturers, they make them, they're kind of skunky. So it's like, this one – so I will say – so this is the Sierra Nevada Oktoberfest. I give it a big ol' okay. It's just okay. This is one of the beers, if your friend had it in a cooler, you wouldn't shy away from picking it up, but I wouldn't recommend buying it in the store.
Wow. Yeah. It's free beer only, huh?
It's free beer only at this point. I'm not a huge fan of it. I mean, it's not bad, but it's not something I can tell people like, hey, you got to go try this. It's just, it's kind of whatever. It's their take at it, and it's just, meh.
Okay. So everyone out there in Motopodland, write in to us, motopod@motopodcast.com, and give us the Skyler beer rating system. Like, I'm thinking like free beer, then like maybe six-pack worthy, and then, case, keg. I don't know. You guys come up with something cool.
Right? And then there's, of course, destination beer if it's really good, right? I mean, we're talking upper echelon is like you have to go to the factory or the brewery to actually have some. Because that can make a huge difference. I've been to... more breweries than I can count just because we have an abundance of them out here. And I even went to the Coors Brewery when I was in Denver when we were out on the traveling race team. And just having like a Coors or a Blue Moon or Keeling's Irish Red just off the tap at the factory where they keep it like in optimal temperatures and whatever else, it's leaps and bounds different than what you get in the store. It's crazy.
Did you go to the up the stream and piss in the water right before it goes to the plant?
No. They have a whole system for that.
That's what I know. Friends that went out there, and there's some spot by the brewery that everybody stops and takes a leak in the water. So I had to ask.
I mean, isn't that where it gets its name, Rocky Mountain Pisswater? I mean,
it damn well could be. I don't know.
Or it could just be that it's really not that great a beer. Anyways, you know,
this is not a beer podcast. Okay, I mean, hear everybody now going, get to the show,
right? So all right, let's jump into it. So this week, Jim. You had prompted some questions that you wanted because we have reached the halfway point in the season. Believe it or not, folks.
Believe it or not, yes.
We waited so long to get here to get to the season started, and we're already halfway through. Small tier. But it's been a crazy season. So, but we got a couple questions, Jim. Why don't you go ahead and fire away?
Okay. So here's my first question for you. Which rider has impressed you the most? All classes.
All right. So I'm going to go from starting with Moto3. I say Ayagura has impressed me the most. He had made some flashes, I believe, last year, but he never was really as a guy on my radar to being the guy that's been at the front of the championship pretty much all year long and threatening, and he's kind of got the whole package right now. He has one lap speed when he needs it. He's got great racecraft, and he knows when to get to the front in Moto3, which is super important to not burn up your tires, sit back, but not sit back too far to where you get balanced out, but make the right moves when you do. He's been really impressive this year. For Moto2, I have to say it's Bezzecchi. He had a freshman year that was kind of, his rookie year was whatever. It was a learning year. But where he lofted off last year and where he has started this year has been a massive jump. I mean, massive. He is up in the front in every single track. He isn't like a one-track wonder. He's been in the front at every track we've just gone to this year. He's threatened for wins. He's gotten his win. I mean, he's just the whole package, and he's in the championship hunt. So very impressive by him. And then for MotoGP, I'd say the most impressed rider that I've had this year has been Brad Binder. I did not expect him to come out and do what he has done on the KTM. Sure, he had the win, right? And he's had, you know, some mixed results there. But I've watched him ride that bike, and he looks like he's been GP for a long time because he's wringing its neck. And I'm surprised to see a guy who has to jump into MotoGP be able to grab a hold of a bike so soon and push its limits. I mean, he's sliding that bike all over the place, sometimes over the limit. But he's just been impressive to me.
Cool. Good choices, good choices. So for Moto3 for me, I thought that the most impressive guy that's there, I'm going to go with Arenas. I know that sounds like the logical, easy choice, but he has won races very strategically. He's been on a roll. He keeps himself qualified relatively well. He's at the front, doesn't do too much, kind of stays there, that 3, 4, 5, 6 position, rides smart, rides with his head, and is leading the championship. So I'll take Arenas for that. For Moto 2, I'll take Marini, because again, I like how he's riding right now. I think he's won races from behind. He's won races where he's led the whole damn thing. He's had races where he's had pressure the whole time, never cracked, was completely and totally in control with what he was doing with that. And he's also had races where people have passed him. He sat there, studied where your weak point is, and went back by you again. All definitely talents that very few have, and he's showing the best talent, and he's leading the world championship. MotoGP, I agree with you 100%. Binder has been absolutely fabulous on the KTM. A win. Again, he is riding that thing like he's been riding a MotoGP bike his entire life. And I think he's absolutely absolutely fabulous. So those are my picks. So, of course, if you have a who impressed you the most kind of category, what do you got to have that goes with that, Skylar? You got to kind of have the who disappointed you the most in all three classes. So tell us who you thought didn't live up to the expectations of Skylar Vicroy.
Right, and we'll preempt this by saying there is no hate towards these people or dislike. It's just from what we've seen overall, what was expected, what's come up, and yada yada. All right, that's enough. Cover my ass. So anyway, for Moto 3, it had to be João Macia. I really thought him being on the Leopold team was, and that team has pumped out some great riders, has put together a great package. He's been at the front, but just inconsistently. And then he's been threatening in the championship the last couple of years. And I thought this was going to be a really big year for him to push. And it just hasn't seemed to come together the way that we thought it is. There's been at times that him and his teammate have been up towards the front. And that's when you kind of only see them. So maybe there is some of this with the team. But it just has not been his year. And I really thought he was going to be a front runner for sure. In Moto 2, unfortunately, it has to be Lorenzo Baldassarre. Only because I know that this guy is fast. We know he can win races. We know we've seen him in a championship hunt in Moto 2. And he's pretty much the irrelevant man now. He's the guy, when he crashes on lap 17, you go, oh shit, I forgot he was even in this race. That's not good for a guy of his talent. So something did not gel. He didn't adapt or whatever. But it's super disappointing to see him in the back. I really do wish he can get to the front because he's an exciting racer. And then MotoGP, me and Jim are probably going to line up here as well. I don't know. But that's going to have to be Maverick Vinales. It's another year of the same thing. We're not getting an improvement on the spots that he's had of just this Maverick slide to the back, the Maverick muck-up, as Jim has coined it on this show. It's weird that he seems to be the only rider within that flock that can't get around whatever issue the Yamaha has in opening laps. Because we've seen in every race of some sort with the Yamaha leading, it's been done at the front in different styles. Morbidelli held control. Quartararo has shown it from control from the beginning. They've ran it back up through the field. But Maverick, just, he's won only one race, and that's the only time he's been competitive at the front of the race is when he got away quick. I guess the first race of the year, he had to charge back through after he just slid back to, I think, fourth or fifth. But still, it just hasn't come together, and I think it's a full circle. The bike isn't where he needs it to be. The team isn't really getting a set up for him, and it's all between... It's all affecting Maverick between the ears, and it's just a recipe for disaster.
Okay.
And three, that's a disaster with him being still competitive in the championship, mind you.
That's very, very, very true. Okay, so my picks for Moto3, I have to pick John McPhee. This was John McPhee's year. This was the year it was all going to come together. He was on a good bike in a good team because that was proven last year with his victory. We know that John can win, and he's got enough experience given everybody else who's sort of migrated out of the class. He definitely, if he wanted to get farther up onto a Moto2 bike, he was going to need to have a great year. Maybe not necessarily win the championship, but definitely be there week in, week out, and be there all the time. And he hasn't shown that. There has been lapses of concentration. There's been bad qualifying. There's been bike problems. There's a whole myriad of reasons why he's not there. But still, I expected a lot more out of John. Didn't get it. In Moto2, this one hurts. It's going to hurt really bad because I'm going to pick on Joel Roberts. Joe, you started out like gangbusters there in the desert in Qatar, okay? We got back into Spain. We got racing again. There was a layoff. You weren't doing that well. You weren't at the front. And then we get to Brno, a track that he likes, and voila, he's back towards the front again. Now we've had another couple races at Misano. He was okay at best. He was top 10. And now we got another, he goes back to another track at Barcelona where he likes, and well, things look better again. You have a Kalex. You have the chassis that everybody else has. Before, you've ridden on the NTSs. They're not that good. I think, what, they had a KTM chassis last year, which was not any good either. Just that was the roll of the dice. So you got the tool that you needed. You got the desired chassis, and you haven't put it together. And it's like, well, hey, if I'm at a track that I like, I do really, really well. But that's not how you win championships. That's not how you get to MotoGP. You have to figure out how to go fast every time you throw your leg over that bike. And God bless him, John Hopkins is working on him and trying to get it there. But it always seems to be like there's always this little something that's causing a problem, which you got to solve. We kind of had that talk. You got to be a professional. This is what it means to be a pro. That is, bring it every single time, right? So that's going on there. Now, in MotoGP, I'll agree with you, Vinales. I mean, it's the Maverick muck-up, as we've said. All the same reasons. Here's a guy who literally should be, given the fact that he's got a tire that will work with the Yamaha, looking at what Quartararo, Morbidelli have all done in the class so far. Even Rossi looks good on the Yamaha this year. And Vinales is like at times the fastest thing on the planet Earth. And then the next thing is he's got nothing. And I'm on record. I've said it before. Say it again. He's got a problem is between his ears. We'll get into that a little more later on. But even Matt Oxley's in on this. He's like, yeah, I remind you, his article, Motorsport Magazine. Hey, yeah, the problem with Maverick Vinales is between his ears. Like, literally, he was, before this race weekend, he was talking about, well, you know, Miller's going to get a hole shot. He's got the hole shot device, and he'll be in front of me, and, oh, I don't know how I'm going to get by. Dude, don't even get on the bike then. If you're that far removed that you don't think that you could have any chance of winning mentally, don't get on the bike. I mean, I get that racing a motorcycle at a professional level is something that, like, all of us who are armchair riders / racers always wanted to do, and it's got to be the dream job. And I think the only person who really ever showed that it really was like a dream job to him was kind of Nicky Hayden. And maybe that's only because I was close to Nicky, raced around him all the time. But how he looked at things, it was always a joy to sign an autograph. It was always a joy to be at that racetrack. He always had a smile on his face, always upbeat, no matter what was going on. Yet somehow Maverick, doesn't have it. So there's my picks there. So I got one more question for you. Here you go, pal. Given the chaos of 2020, what has shocked you the most?
That would be that Marc Marquez went out in the first round of the season, busting his arm, and the floodgates pretty much opened up. This was an unexpected turn. We kind of thought it was going to be, all right, how many wins is Marc Marquez going to get this year, and who can be the one that can take a few off of him, right? And it completely changed the entire season. Like, him going out, the floodgates opened up. Everybody gets a win.
Yep, yep. So I've got two for this one because I couldn't separate the two because these two things to me were of equal magnitude in a season of chaos. First, I will give you the engine problems. Look at all the engine problems Yamaha had. That's just unheard of. And then Ducati with Bagnaia had one. I mean, that was crazy at the beginning of the year. I mean, you would not expect them to have that kind of a problem. We've been in this, you know, three motors or four motors per season kind of thing. And you really don't have these kind of truly catastrophic failures that we've seen. You know, all the smoke rolling out of the exhaust where who knows what happened. You ate a valve or you scuffed some rings or whatever it was that you had as a problem. You know, no one's going to tell us. I mean, we've heard faulty sensors inside of the M1 engines and whatnot. But that's unheard of, especially for these bikes. So I thought that was pretty shocking that we had actual engine problems. The other thing that I think is shocking is the performance of the KTM MotoGP bike, the RC16. I am a KTM fan. I'm not going to shy away from that. But even I didn't think that we would get a win in the dry, let alone two wins in the dry. I thought maybe a dry podium, maybe two podiums. That'd be about it. But nope, they wound up getting two of them. I mean, and I will say nobody was going to beat Bender at Brno. He was just on par, on song, on it. I don't even care if Marquez was there. Bender still probably would have beat him because Bender was phenomenal there. The race in Austria, I think we all kind of expected the KTMs to be towards the front, and I thought that's where they had a chance of just getting on the podium, per se. But they won again, and they won with one of their satellite bikes, and, you know, questionable circumstances there at the end between Spargaro and Jack Miller. But you got to be there to win, you know, finish first, first you must finish, that kind of thing, which shows that not only is KTM is a good factory team, they're also doing very well with Tech 3. So that, you know, everybody laughed at Hervé Poncharal and said, no, hey, don't, this is stupid. Why are you leaving Yamaha? That's crazy to go to KTM. Well, he got better equipment. He got treated like an equal, and he proved that his team was capable of producing a motorcycle or putting a motorcycle underneath of someone who can win races. So that was a shock. I mean, what was Hervé's, they were doing it for 20 years without a win, I think. Was it 20? So those are my moments. Couldn't separate them.
Yeah, no, those are all good. It was hard not to pick the Bender moment as my most shocking moment. One of the things I thought about when you were talking about the Tech 3 is that when Tech 3 was with Yamaha, they never got factory parts. In fact, they always got the previous year model, and in many times they got like what was left of the parts for the previous model. And I remember when Dovizioso was talking about, you know, he wanted better brakes. Was when Cal was there too? I can't remember which one of them paid like out of pocket to get the Brembos put on. I think it was Dovi did, and Cal was like, "Nope, not doing that." Or maybe vice versa.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. Yeah, that's and how it went. Dovi reaching his pocket.
Right, and so, you know, they weren't getting wins. And so if anyone's thinking like, oh, well, if they just stuck it out, look at Petronas now. Petronas is not the same. Those are factory contract riders getting factory bikes. Yamaha realized they needed to do something. They had to figure out who was going to be the next rider because, and I don't know if they'll continue on giving factory bikes down to the junior team because they're getting the floor mopped by them right now. But
because of the riders.
Yeah. And so it was a win-win, right? They got to go to a team, develop. They got their wins. They showed that their skill and their decision was correct. But at the same time, Yamaha brought in a junior team that did a really good job as well. But it's not an apples-to-apples comparison to what was there before when Tech 3 left. But kudos to everyone there. All right, Jim. That brings us to the news. We got a few things to talk about. Why don't you go ahead and lead us off?
In the news, we know that Remy Gardner was moving to IO, so that left an opening at his old team, the 1XOX TKKR SAG team. That's a mouthful and a half. But Luthi is going to go ride there next year for Moto2. Our good friend in Moto3, Tony Arbolino, will go to Moto2. He's going to join Marshall Schroeder on the Liquid Moly team, taking Luthi's place.
That's a good. That's, I think Arbolino going there. I think it's that's a good move right there for that team.
Arbolino needs to get out of Moto 3.
Well, he's a big boy too.
He's,
I mean,
he's very tall. Mm-hmm. I think he's definitely he's quick. He's fast. I think he's one of those guys who's going to benefit from having the more torque of the Triumph engine, and he's going to benefit tremendously being on that bike. I think he's going to. I think he's going to set the world on fire with it because he's going to a good team. They're definitely they've got a Kalex. That's definitely what you need to have. I think it's a I don't want to say it's a match made in heaven, but it's a good move for Arbolino. Definitely a very good move for Arbolino.
Now with Luthi going to Remy's old team, do you think this is Luthi's last stop on the Moto 2 train? He's going backwards. He's going backwards now because he progressed through. Moto 2, right from the giddy up, he's all the way from 125 Moto 2. He got to MotoGP with the same team, didn't work out, so he stepped back. But he stepped back to a good team Moto 2. But now it's like, not to be mean or anything, but it seems like it's a small step back to this team here.
Yeah, so Luthi's in his 30s too, isn't he? I mean, he's like 32 or something. He's like as old as Dobie.
Yeah, yeah. He's been in the game for a while, and so I just wonder. He has not looked himself for the Luthi that we're used to seeing this year. We've seen him make an appearance at the front, I think, in one race. But he's been riding back there in that 10-15 spot pretty regularly. I just don't I don't know how much longer he's got in Moto 2. Although I will say going to the World Superbike might be his good move.
Might be a good move there. The question I think that we don't know is Luthi bringing money. Or did no one else not bring enough money to get that seat? Because I'm pretty sure that team, as well as a lot of the Moto 2 teams, except for maybe Io and a couple others, Grassini, they need some money somewhere to fund it, and the riders are essentially paying for that ride. I think you're right. I think this is the last train. he's on the last train out of Boston, right? And there's not going to be another one. I don't think if he does, if he turns it around, hey, great. But I think you're looking at a World Superbike destined Thomas Luthi.
Maybe. I mean, it's getting hard to get a seat over there now too. I mean,
yes, for anyone, I agree.
I mean, I know we don't talk about it on the show very much because we don't have that much time or the capacity to cover it, but World Superbike has been pretty good this year. And the competition over there with the amount of riders and skill level is pretty high.
Yep. Let's move on in the news. Cal Crutchlow stumbles out of his motorhome, rolls his ankle, and ruptures tendons. Can anything else go wrong for anybody who rides a Honda? Like right now, if I'm like Brattle or Marquez, I seriously have got like, I'm keeping garlic nearby and a steak in case a vampire attack happens or what other weird stuff can happen. I mean, does the Yamaha teams have voodoo dolls and they're poking pins in these guys or what is it? But that's just crazy stupid for Cal.
Yeah, and it was bad too. I mean, he showed a picture of his ankle and I was like, oh boy. Oh man. Like, and you just know that's not just because of that one rolled ankle. That's from years of just bouncing your body around. Just nothing hangs tight anymore when you do injure yourself. All right, Jim. So that brings us to probably the most obvious news of the weekend.
Worst kept secret in the business.
This guy, Valentino Rossi, who did he sign for?
He went to Sprinta Patronus, the junior Yamaha team. Like, duh. Was he going anywhere else? I mean, they said that it took a long time to get the contract negotiated properly. A lot of give and take. Well, what the heck was the give and the take? I mean, I don't think Rossi's racing for the money.
Oh, so I can tell you if you want to know.
Oh, well, that was kind of rhetorical.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. Maybe your answer to that question is different than my answer to that question. Well, so let me give you my thought then. If I'm the same as you, cool. If not, you can tell me where I'm wrong. I believe the stumbling point was that Rossi, when signing that contract, he is now not able to take two of the people that he has been with forever on a Yamaha with him on his crew. Alex Briggs and Brent Asinasu, I hope I got that right, are not going with him. They have been with Rossi ever since he set foot on a Yamaha. In fact, I think Briggs was with him Jerry Burgess did 500 Hondas. So Alex has been with him forever. So I think that was a sticking point. Like Rossi really did not want to go to Petronas without those guys.
No, absolutely. And, you know, this is good. This is exactly what it is because on Motor Matters, motormatters.com, David Emmons' site, go check it out. He had a great article up that pretty much explained the same thing, right? Where there was a couple negotiations. And the reason being, just to kind of tag on, you've already explained why it wasn't going. But Petronas looked at it like, listen, Rossi's only signing an actual one-year extension with the factory Yamaha. And they can't make a three-rider team, so they're just going to put him on the factory bike to our team. So it was kind of a, you're going to go there, and Petronas, you're going to accept this. And everyone's like, okay, but we have thoughts. And everyone's like, well, we have to try to make it work because this is the situation. So Petronas said, listen, you only got a one-year extension. There's been all these rumors you're going to go set up your own team, or you might just hang it up. We're not going to be stuck out here by cleaning out all of the team that we put together and is working really well on both sides of the garage for you to bring your guys over here and then have them retire after a year because they've been in the game so long too and be like, we're all going to leave together. It was fun. Thanks for the year. And that screws up them because it isn't like they can just let those guys go from their team and expect them to stick around and wait it out. They're all going to go off to different teams and different adventures across the paddock. It's a moving circus. So it did take a while, but I mean, we are finally seeing that Rossi does not hold all the power anymore. He has a little bit of negotiation, and it made sense they're going to bring over a data guy and they're going to bring over his crew chief because that's super important to a rider. But the fact that Alex doesn't get the Briggs to go with him anymore, I mean, we're seeing the wrap up for sure. It's a good move for Petronas to take Rossi on, but I would have to say after the only 1 year, I wouldn't be surprised if Rossi's just like, he either goes starts his own team, or he takes a year off, or he just decides, hey, thanks, I'm out of here.
So how about this as a wild thought? I think that part of the contract negotiations was Rossi wanted a stake in the team. He wanted to have some sway as to who was riding the motorcycles. He has a VR46 Moto 3 team. He has a VR46 Moto 2 team. He does not have anywhere to put his riders in a Moto GP grid. Rossi, now, I'm quite sure the wheels are turning to where he, since he couldn't buy into Petronas, he is going to want his own VR46 Moto GP team. However, I do not think it will be powered by Yamaha. Yamaha will tell him, no, we don't have the resources to give you factory bikes. So do you want year-old bikes? Rossi's not going to take that because he's Valentino Rossi. I expect Rossi, within 2 years, will have his own VR46 MotoGP team powered by KTMs.
Oh, you're going KTM? I was thinking Suzuki.
Really? Yeah. I would go with KTM because I think Rossi wants to go down a V4 route. I think that's where he's going to go because I think that's the bikes to have. Still, even with the tires issue, I think it's there. I think he knows he's got a relationship with KTM because his Moto3 team are KTM based. So I think he's got an in there, and I think he's seen what happened with Tectoire, and I think he realizes that he would be able to get he would be able to get factory bikes that are competitive without a problem. And I think he wants that. I think that's what he's going to do. The Suzuki idea, I flirted with that for a little bit, but they're smaller than even Yamaha. Suzuki is the smallest. Suzuki's the smallest factory, but Kawasaki has like their whole building ship business and everything too. So they got a lot of deep pockets, but their motorcycle sales are pretty small too, but they're having fun time in World Superbike. They're not going to leave that. So with the Suzuki, I don't think they have enough capacity to put four bikes on the grid. As much as what Suzuki needs a satellite team, I don't think they can do it.
I thought they've been talking about it. There's been a lot of rumors that they've been looking to extend out. But
they've been talking
is,
about it, and there's nothing happening.
The hang-up right now, it's the grid is full, right? Max capacity. And they have to buy out another team and take their spots, right? Like a Venti or something like that, and then take over those spots. So it can be expensive.
I think that's where the Rossi sway comes in.
That's what I was going to say.
Rossi holds a lot.
He's going to get them to push it to... Oh, 22. It's Rossi. We're going to go to 24 bikes on the grid. And then maybe Yamaha will squeeze out some more.
Right. Because Rossi's got enough sway with Carmelo Ezpeleta to say, look, I need a team. I'm not buying one. I'm coming with a team. Do I got a spot? And what's Carmelo going to say? Who's going to tell Valentino Rossi no at that point? Because let's be fair. Rossi has saved MotoGP in a time when MotoGP needed to be saved. So there's sort of a debt kind of owed Valentino Rossi, but now everything's on a firm footing and you got all the kids that are coming in. You don't need that anymore. You don't need Rossi to bring all the fans in. Yeah, it's going to hurt when Rossi's not riding, but Rossi's still going to be there all the time.
Right, and it's a win-win for everybody. He gets a team, he's still there. It's more, the grid isn't overcrowded. It isn't like we have 40 bikes out there, right?
No.
I mean,
no.
It's under control, but...
I think a few more bikes would make it more interesting, personally.
Yeah. Now, if we could just get them to show more of the battles throughout the pack on the television feed, that'd be great. All right. So we
got to keep going.
we got to keep going here. I'm going to say it, Jim. We've hit the halfway mark. That's such a lie. That shit never works. But anyway, we do have a little bit of listener feedback to go through here real quick.
Yep.
Grant Heffernan. Heffernan writes in real quick with a question here. It's a short question. We've kind of discussed this before, but when is Yamaha going to cut their losses with and toss Vinales? He can only do one of two things. He either wins from the front if he's there after one lap, or he goes backwards. He does the latter more frequently. Thanks, Grant, for sending it in. Question is, it's a good question, right? We've asked this a couple times in the show. What's going on? Is it time to let him go? It's maybe best for both parties where Yamaha gets to start over somebody new and Maverick gets to go to a new team, new bike, and gets his head around it. I don't know. I would say he got his extension. This is his last one if he can't do anything with it.
Agreed. I got two words for you. Luca Marini. That's where he's going. Now, he may not be there on the factory team right away. But I can see Rossi stopping, Marini going to Petronas with Morbidelli, Quartararo and Vinales sees out his contract. Vinales is then tossed, Marini goes up.
Interesting. It would be interesting to see if they can bring up. That is if Quartararo turns out to be the person who we hope he can, and it's a title contender, and they want to bring in another young person to back that up. Because if it doesn't work out so with Quartararo, I mean, they may try to go get someone with a little bit more experience. They may try to get up a... if you hear beeping, that's the banana bread that my wife is making over here in the kitchen. The smell is killing me right now. And let me go with some experience. There's still the Zarcos of the world out there. There's still going to be... I don't know if Dovi will be here because he's unemployed currently, but there's still going to be a lot more chance. I mean, they may snatch up some of the young talent that's coming up that may not have a factory seat at that point or already does and they want to go to a different team. I mean, Mir's contract might be up by then. You may be looking at a situation where they can snag Pecco Bagnaia. I doubt it, but there's always strange things that happen in GP like that. But anyway, I digress. Let's get on. Go ahead.
Are you ready for Moto 3?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely ready for Moto 3. And it brings us into a little bit of qualifying, Jim.
Yes. The big shock for qualifying one was the fact that McPhee, Arenas, Agüero, and Anshu were all in that first qualifying session. Like, hello, you guys cannot be in here. This is not where you're supposed to be. Anshu, okay, you got to give me that one. But Agüero, McPhee, and Arenas really should not have been there. McPhee has been there too many times. And what really was interesting was when we got down to the end of it, McPhee and Agüero, they needed big big laps, big, they had to go for it on the last minute. McPhee was like constantly pulling back in the pits, looking for people to quit towing around. It's like, dude, you just got to get on with it. And he finally did. They put in times that were fast enough to get through. So Lopez, Antonelli, McPhee, and Arenas, they all make it in. But Agüero could not make anything work. Agüero was 10th in that Q1 session. So he was going to start well back for the race. When we got to qualifying two, after the first runs, it was Arbolino. Is anyone shocked because that Honda's a missile in a straight line? Then Fernandez, Arenas, who was looking good. Now he kind of got it together. Binder, Alcoba, and Toba. Everyone got their last flying laps. Fernandez was fastest when this was taking place. Then you had the last lap. Everybody was going there. Arbolino went to pole. Then Fernandez, Rodrigo, Arenas, Masi, Antonelli. Fernandez actually crashed on his last flying lap. He had a tie side at turn 14, which that's a fast corner to go off on the high side in. But that was how qualifying played out. Anything to add for that, Skyler, before we go to the race?
No, because the race, I want to get to the
end. Where it's at.
So quick, but I know the Moto3 race was a fantastic race. So it starts off with Arbolino. He gets the whole shot. And in my notes here, it says, Bender's already at the front. Can he have a good finish? So a very ominous typing there by myself there. And
I had the same thing. I had the same part. I was like, ooh, Bender's at the front. This is going to be interesting.
Right. That's been his Achilles heels. Been like qualify 17th. And by lap 7, he's up there. But how hard did he push the tire? And we've kind of seen he might have pushed them too hard in the last couple of races. It was Slipstream City. Barcelona's got a big old straightaway there. And these boys, every time it gets to the point where you can't really bother taking notes as far as position-wise. You just kind of have to note the cool things that happen up. Rodrigo, now this was a little bit different. Rodrigo bumped into Arbolino on the straight. It was kind of a hard bump, but this is a little bit different from last week where Rodrigo was off to the inside and was trying to cut back towards the racing line. He didn't quite see Arbolino on the outside and it hit him, but it was like, oh crap, like they had the contact. He didn't weave from the line he was taking. He just was starting to come across an angle. So if anybody saw that and thought that was the same thing, it's not. It's a little different.
No, definitely not. Yeah, that was... Hey, everybody was in their right line, and then they just kind of come together. I mean, there is a weird thing of aerodynamics when you kind of go there. You create a low-pressure area between the two bikes because the air is suddenly divided by the two. And when that happens, you experience this sometimes. You'll see it like on the interstate when you're – or here, at least here in the U.S., you've got the big tractor trailers, the big lorries, the articulated lorries. When two of them go by each other, you'll see them actually come together because the air has to travel faster between the two trailers. It's like a Venturi, so it creates lower air pressure, so they want to suck together. Kind of same thing happened here.
Pretty much. And so something else, McPhee got up into the battle. We were five laps in from the start, and there was a ton of battles going through on because the slipstream was just nuts. There's lots of passing going through corners. It was a great race by here. Migno, he kind of ran wide with turn two, and this is where we start to see the first of like a little bit of sloppiness. And then right on lap six, we had probably the biggest event outside of the end. McPhee goes down as he tries to make an aggressive pass coming up there into turn four, and he takes out Albert Arenas. Both championship contenders out. Arenas more so because he was leading the points in the championship this time. They go out in lap six. It's over. Arenas was livid. Oh, I'm pretty sure there were some choice.
Hot.
Yeah, there were some choice words being said. McPhee ended up just kind of walking away from him. Like, he didn't even say I'm sorry or anything because he knew it wasn't going to matter at this point. Let me just get away from this guy. Let him cool down. He did go down and apologize to Arenas. He came down and apologized. But he made a cardinal sin, Jim, when he went to go apologize. Now, this is something I didn't know. It's just something I've learned from watching racing. What's the one thing you're supposed to do before you go apologize to somebody?
Take your helmet off.
That's right. And he was down in the pits before Arenas got back, and he still had his helmet on and went down to talk to him. It's like, I know it's a small thing, but you're supposed to do that. And and Stickerfeld was with him. He should have told him no, but what are you going to do? Yeah. Arenas was kind of like, yeah, thanks for coming by. See you later.
So let me ask you a question about this incident. Does McPhee deserve a penalty for the incident?
Oh, this is tough because it goes back to the thing they talk about a lot, especially in Moto 2 and Moto 3. Do you want to punish riders for going for it? There's egregious moves, right? Where you're using the person as a berm, but then there's you're going for a risky move and you lost on the brakes, and well, that's a bummer. I'm gonna say at this point, this was a very much there was no intention to use him as a berm. He just thought he could save on the brakes, didn't quite slid out, and unfortunately, Arenas, wrong place, wrong time. So I'm gonna say that. If you want to look, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Continue your thought.
If you want to look at an example of what I think is a punishable offense, more so, this would be Aaron Canet last year when he ran in. I can't remember what track it was, but he jumped on the brakes and slammed into the side of Suzuki and then put his arms up like, whoa, that's just racing. That to me, if he'd have took him out, that's a penalty. He didn't take him out because Suzuki stood it up, but that's the kind of crap I think you can't be doing.
Yeah, I do not think John needs a penalty in this case. You know, start from pit lane or six paces or whatever you want to give him. Because Arbolino had kind of checked up a little bit. So McPhee naturally does what anybody does in that situation, pulls the front brake lever a little bit more. Because now that space and time that you expected to have isn't there anymore. Consequently, front end folds. Down he goes. Okay. Well, who happened to be on the outside of it when John fell? Arenas, which is just who he was trying to pass to begin with. Now, you can throw blame everywhere you want on this, but McPhee was definitely to the inside, but Arenas was definitely wide going into that corner. It wasn't like Arenas was on the racing line or close to the racing line. He kind of went in there a little far. McPhee saw the gap, went in. Arbolino kind of had a little issue. McPhee pulls a brake, front end folds. We're done. Over. So, you know, it's not, you know, I agree. Hey, Arenas has got every reason to be pissed off. I would be pissed off too because you got taken down. You're the championship leader, but none of that was intentional. It's called racing, and that's what we do. We race.
That's right. And it isn't like McPhee is a consistent guy that does this either. This is just a mistake in a hard race. All right, so that brings us. So now at this point, with 12 to go, the top six, they look like they're pulling away, but this is Moto 3. We should know better. Masia, the guy that we were talking about so kindly of earlier in the show, he had gotten his way to the front, and then a train of six became a train of 12 all of a sudden, and Foggia at the front. So the Leopold boys were getting up there. They were getting in a good mix. And now, after 14 laps, and then we're getting into the later side of the race. The top six pulling away? No, the top 20 were one giant train as it goes along with about five laps to go. Nico Antonelli was having a great race until the commentators decided they wanted to talk about him having a great race, and then boom, see you later, he's out. It was getting very tough out there. Rodrigo, unfortunately, Jim, it's just become a thing. He was up to the front all race, and like you said, you got to be there at the end. That's the skill. He got beat up and pushed out the back once again. He was top five for 80% of that race, and when it mattered, shot out the back. Ugh.
Yep. Elbows out, baby. Elbows out. I mean, this isn't like a boxing match. You know, Moto 2 might be like a boxing match. Maybe Moto GP is. This is like mixed martial arts. I mean, it's legs, elbows, arms. You got to have it all, or you got to be far enough ahead that it doesn't matter. And I know just from some guys that I clubbed raced with, some guys, there's not an aggressive bone in their body. They're super fast by themselves. They're super smooth. They're really quick. But you put them in a pack of two or three guys, they just don't want to. They don't want to be in there for whatever reason it is. And you know, is it lack of aggression? Maybe they don't think they got the skill or equipment. Whatever it is. The kid's got talent. Rodrigo's got talent like there's no tomorrow. But there's a mental piece of this, an aggressive part that he has not got, or he has not figured out how to cope with what these guys are doing to him. And kind of surprised that, you know, once, twice, okay, yeah, you should know by now that this is what these guys do. And I hope that when we go to Le Mans and to Aragon, which are the next three races, that he definitely doesn't let it happen to him again.
Absolutely. So at this point in the race, we know the championship is all upside down on its head because McPhee is out and Arenas is out. And so this is time for Iagura to make points, get after it. And he just can't. And so the commentators, they were constantly like, where is he? He's the 15th. He's not passing. Where is he? Where is he? But I watched him meticulously on the straightaways. He could not get around anybody in a draft. Something was wrong with his bike. I don't know
if it's... Did you listen to the onboards?
Yeah, no, I didn't listen. I don't remember listening to the onboards, but it just wasn't there.
He was on the rev limiter.
Oh.
By the time they got to the pit exit, that thing was banging a rev limiter in the draft. It was like, I was like, no. Like, I don't know how they missed that. Like, you guys have enough experience to know that you got to take a tooth or two off because you're going to get sucked along in this. But yeah, it was banging rev limiter. It was terrible.
Yeah. And so he couldn't get really much of anything. He did. The fact where he finished was great despite of that bike, but definitely a bad weekend to not have your shit together, because this would have been a huge weekend for him to get a top five in, because it would have jumped this championship out for him. So as we're getting towards the end, we're looking around, and of course, me and Jim have an eye on that green, white, and black bike. Darren Binder still up there, still doing his thing. Mossy was running up to the front. He was wide, and there was something I wanted to note here. If you want to see what everyone was saying, remember when Pol Espargaró ran into Zarco, but they gave Zarco the penalty, and it's like, I personally didn't agree with that, because, hey, you need to come back onto the line clean. Mossia did a very exaggerated example of what you should not do when you run wide. He ran wide and made an aggressive angle to get back towards the apex. Luckily, the whole train had gone by. But that's the kind of stuff where it's like, hey, the rider has to be responsible. And, well, that's, if you want to look at, that's why Pol Espargaró should have, I mean, I don't think Zarco should have got the penalty, because that's what I'm talking about. We get to the last lap, and Binder's sitting right there. He makes a very nice move into turn five to take the lead. Binder was a demon. He's always been a demon on the brakes. We know this about him. And it was on display once again, because he made passes where you didn't think. They thought he was going to make it in turn three, turn four. No, it was turn five. He gets by, gets out, runs it, commands it, gets the gap, enough to give a line, gets his first win ever. Congrats to Darren Binder. The Binder family is having a hell of a season, I'm telling you.
It was a fantastic ride by Binder. I mean, I think we had like maybe six laps to go. I'm thinking, Binder's going to win this thing, because he was just so good on the brakes. He has so much trust in that front end, and it was, you could tell, he was riding with the confidence of what a winner has. He could put the bike anywhere he wanted and outbrake anybody he wanted whenever he wanted to. The fact that he did it at turn five, I thought that was fantastic. That is a hard corner, because you're doing that downhill, the whole downhill thing's happening, which is even harder to go into a corner because you have no camber to help you because it's going the wrong way. Fantastic move by Binder, and a tip of the Motopod hat to you, sir, for your first one in Moto 3. May you have many more next year with the Petronas boys, because I'm telling you, if he continues to ride like this and then hops on the Petronas team, yeah, that boy might have to be set, you know, as a potential championship contender.
Absolutely. So that brings us to race results. Darren Binder, he gets hers. Tony Arbolano has a nice race to grab second. Dennis Foggia rounds out the podium for the apart racing there in third. Sergio Garcia, he had a nice race coming fourth. Alonso Lopez, now there was a name we haven't been talking about at all this season. In fact, he was running at the front of the race for a little bit there. He has it, grabs a nice fifth on the Sterigato Max Racing team, right in front of his teammate over Romano Fanati. Drama Fias finishes seventh. We have Celestino Viette there in 8th, Nicola Antonelli in 9th, Gabriel Rigo there in 10th, and Ayagura finishing in 11th. Definitely not where he needed to finish in this race, but at least he was able to snag some points there at the end. And that brings us to the championship, which takes a little bit of change this week, but it's still very, very tight. Ayagura is leading the championship 122 points. Albert Arenas is now in 2nd place, but he is only 3 points behind. John McPhee, after that crash, well, now they're starting to meet some separation from the top two, because John McPhee's on 98. So he's quite a bit back there in the championship there. Tony Arbolino's on 95. Sasha Vietti is there at 94. And Suzuki, he's on 95, but we know he's going to keep slipping out the back. He's got a busted arm. He's not going to be back for a while. So that's going to be a little bit, or busted wrist, I should say. All right, Jim, why don't you head us off in a Moto2 qualifying?
Okay, let's look at how Moto2 qualifying went down. So, with Moto2, in the first qualifying session, we had Roberts, Buliga, Dixon, Navarro, Garzo, and Della Porta. Now, Della Porta has been getting better and better and better, which I find really, really good for him. Roberts went out and put in a fast lap, and then he just kept going faster, faster, faster. And suddenly he was doing 143s, which is a really good time for a Moto 2 bike around there. In the end, Roberts went through with Dixon, Navarro, and Baliga. Yeah, there's something about those speed ups and Barcelona that they just seem to somehow gel together. Because if you remember, Quartararo had a speed up, and Quartararo won at Barcelona. So there's something definitely there with those bikes and how they work around that. I don't know if it's just the flowy nature of the circuit or what it is, but something good there.
And they got the setup right.
Oh, yeah, they got the setup right for once. So as we go into QP2 and we get this run for the pole, we know that that Remy was going to have a six place grade gridder penalty for not respecting a yellow flag that happened for the crash, for a prior crash that happened, because he crashed in a yellow flag zone. So he was going to be down six places no matter where he finished. It was pretty much just a Marini show. He was definitely just out front and ran off with it to get pole. And we had him followed by Navarro on the speed up. Lowe's had a very good run to come third. Then DG Antonio on speed up. So the speed ups are right there. It's Barcelona. They're good. Where we expected. Dixon with an outstanding qualifying. You know, he's kind of racing for his life because he wants to keep that seat. Petronas is not saying it, but I think that they want to put McPhee on that bike. So Dixon's definitely in the Battle of Britain to keep that seat. And he did himself no harm. Then Skyler's favorite, Bezzecchi. Roberts finished seventh. He was in that 143.7. I mean, he was only 0.4 off. So I was looking for good things from Roberts at that point. And you had Ramirez in eighth. And then ninth was our good friend Chave Verhey. So there's our front three rows.
It's kind of the players that we wanted there, right? It's all the rights. And again, I just wanted to note out that Jake Disson, there's been a turnaround there in that team. He's figured something out because we saw he was strong in the previous race, but now qualifying in the top five as well, there's been some kind of improvement there was clicking. And he's an exciting racer. I remember watching him in BSB, so I'm kind of excited to see him get to the front moto too as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. The race start, Marini gets the whole shot. Absolutely brilliant whole shot by Marini. He's out front. The speed up boys, they're right there with him. It's basically a Marini race at this point. DG Antonio is there. Navarro is right with them. They're doing pretty good with it. I was sort of watching like what was happening with Roberts. Was he going to be able to make anything happen from his seventh grid spot? He was very aggressive at the start. He was able to get in with the lead guys. He was in the top five. Hopkins, they had interviewed him before the race. Could Roberts do anything? He said, well, we're looking at top five. That'll be a great win for us. I'm thinking that'd be good for them. You know, kind of if you can consistently find a way to stay there, that'd be great. Bastianini would just went absolutely backwards at the start. I don't know what was the problem that was going on for him, but he didn't get a good start. Wasn't looking any good at all. Like he had lost the plot. I don't know why the beast was that far off of his game, but he recovered a little bit towards the end, but he was going backwards. Then poor old Dixon, his bike failed him.
Yeah, that was a bummer.
He kept twisting the throttle like the flyby. I'm assuming it's a flyby wire system for the throttles on the Moto 2 bikes and not a cable, but it seemed like it just wouldn't run or for whatever reason. So I really felt for Dixon. I mean, you're riding really good. He was definitely in that top five. Probably was going to finish in the top five. So for him to have the bike fail him at a crucial time, yeah, that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, that was a bummer because he was looking to make his push, and him and Roberts, like you said, they were having a great battle, and that was probably going to be the battle of the race. But unfortunately, Dix's bike gave it the ghost.
Yep. The Sam Lowe's finally makes an appearance at the front. We were about 15 laps to go. Lowe's kind of showed up there. He was following Marini. He was working his way methodically through everybody as he was. Lowe's is a demon on the brakes, and he was definitely showing that. Into turn one, he was last of the breakers. He was really good going into turn 10. He actually had a point where he was in really deep at 10, and he was way out of shape. But, you know, he crowded in back in. He was able to pull it back together again. Verhey, he was down at turn 9. He had an issue with that. Roberts finally got past Navarro. He had been working on that move for several laps. He was trying to find his spot there. I was thinking, okay, cool. You're kind of past Navarro now. Maybe you got some time. Maybe you'll get some rhythm, because Roberts would move into clear air at that point in it. With 10 to go, it was still Marini and Lowe's out front. You knew this is where the battle was going to be. DiGiantonio had fallen off a little bit. Roberts wasn't gaining on anybody, but he was in the clear with Navarro by him. Bastianini had started to recover and was starting to find some rhythm. He was up, would be about fifth at that point. I tell you, from with 10 laps to go to somewhere around like 5 laps to go, there was 5 laps of really good racing between Joe Roberts and Navarro. That was a ding-dong battle, because every time Navarro got ahead of him, Roberts would outbreak him at the next turn, or Navarro would be wide because he went so late. And so Roberts was playing the flip-flop there through turns 1 and 2, and he'd get back past Bastianini. And it's kind of those in-the-pack battles that are sometimes really, really good that we'd like to see more of. So it was nice to be able to see them going after each other, because, again, out front, it was Marini and Lowe's. Lowe's was in one of those like stalking modes. Like you knew he was coming and you thought, okay, well, he's going to eventually get him. But Lowe's was trying to either maybe conserve the tires a little bit, temperatures were very cool. People were concerned about the left side of the tire getting very cold and then having a low side crash because of it. During this, Jorge Martin, who was back, he had then passed the COVID-19 protocol, was allowed back into the group. He pulled into the pits. I do not know what his reasoning was for pulling into the pits. Do you have an idea, Skyler? Because I didn't read it anywhere.
I would assume it was a mechanical, because he was nowhere in this race.
Yeah, I thought it had to be something wrong with the bike. I don't know what it is. His title hopes now are completely done. I don't think there's anywhere to go. We got down to 7 laps to go, and Lowe's gets by Marini at turn 1. Outbreaks him, goes in there. I thought, oh, okay, great. He gets in there. He made his move. He gets out front. I thought, okay, Lowe's was holding a little bit in pace. He's going to see if he can break Marini at this point. But while that was going on, Navarro got a move on Roberts at 10, and he actually made that stick. So it was Lowe's out front for a while. He leads the race for about he led for about 5 laps. And this is where Marini just played it smart. He went the study on Lowe's, because he got outbraked and Lowe's kind of got away from him. Marini put his head down, followed Lowe's, studied him, saw what he was doing right, saw what he was doing wrong. 2 laps to go, Marini goes by Lowe's at turn 1. You outbreak the outbreaker. So that's doing pretty good on there. Marini then cruised to the victory with Lowe's in second. DiGiantonio had a lonely third, because he was like 4 seconds behind Marini. Then Navarro, who stayed ahead of Roberts. Roberts did get a top 5 finish to prove John Hopkins right, which was great to see Joe again. But again, this is the up and down kind of thing that happens. So, I mean, who knows what's going to happen when we go to Le Mans, but I like to see something more out of it. Bastianini recovered from his way down the list of events to finally finish in 6th. Then Bezzecchi, Canet, Ramirez, Schroeder, Luthi, Nagashima, Gartho, Pons, and our final point scorer was Simone Corse in 15th. Oh, and did you see at the end of the race, Baldassare crashed a low side out of the last turn with Remy Gardner, who was just in front of him. And Remy just looked at him as he slid away like, dude, did you just really do that?
Yeah.
And then he looked back again like, okay, you okay? Like, he had to double take it. Like, he wasn't expecting that to happen. And I'm quite don't understand how he did it either, because I know it's downhill and off camber a little bit there, but I don't know why he lost the front like he did.
Yeah, that was a bummer to see, right? Crashing out the last lap on the last or penultimate turn there. That's, that is pretty much how his season is gone right there. Just, he's not
in
gonna
a nutshell,
have him.
That's why he's your worst rider of the class.
Not worst, disappointing. Worse riders, but he's the most disappointing for sure. So that brings us down to our Moto2 championship standings. You have Luca Marini leading the championship there on 150 points. It was a great weekend because the championship contenders didn't have as great a weekend. He now has a 20-point gap over NAA Bastianini, and then sitting in another 16 points back is Marco Bezzecchi there on 114 points. Sam Lowe's now in fourth place on 103, and a big gap back to Jorge Martin there in fifth on 79. Tetsuya Nakashima, he kind of had a blip in the beginning of the season and has been nowhere since, but still sitting there in sixth place. So a bit of a strange one there. Great Qatar, and that's about it.
But they should always race a Qatar all the time.
Maybe he's a night racer. Who knows? And that brings us to the big race of the weekend with a little bit of MotoGP. And we'll start it off with a little bit of qualifying.
So this is the level that MotoGP has gotten to. In qualifying, one was Bagnaia, Rins, Miller, Dovi, and Nakagami. They were all in the first qualifying session. I mean, that, you know, here's Bagnaia, who after San Marino, he was my pick to win. I thought Bagnaia was just going to come here with that long straightaway and that Ducati power and just really, literally just walk everybody. But here he was in Q1 trying to get out. Miller put it through down a great set of laps. He definitely used two softs to do it. But Miller got out along with Rins. They were the ones who were able to get out of that session and they were able to move on. In Moto2, Quartararo messed up turn 10. He was having problems there. I thought, ooh, this is not looking good. But he recovered. It was weird because everybody was kind of turning fast time. So it was Rossi, no, then it was Vinales, no, then it was Morbidelli. We had Oliveira who was down at turn 10 with a low side. After the first runs on softs, we had Morbidelli, Miller, who had no new softs left. So he threw down one lap. One try, he was second to Morbidelli, then Zarco and Vinales, and then after it all shook out for the final part of the qualifying, Morbidelli took his first pole, and he did it really pretty well. He did it by 7/10. I mean, he really blasted Quartararo's time. Rossi then came through to be third on the grid, one of Rossi's best performances in I don't know how long, and then we had Miller, who, you know, only had one new soft, made it last, and got to fourth. I think Miller was trying to hope he was going to get on that front row. It didn't work for him, but you're looking for big things for him from a hole shot perspective. So they've got the hole shot device. It's really been good there. Then you had Vinales. Well, he's behind Miller and half of the other Yamahas, so you know his mind wasn't going to be anywhere near where it needed to be. Then Zarco, Paul Espargaro, Mir, the Suzukis were not as good as I expected them to be. You know, Rins doesn't get out of the first qualifying session, but Mir is, and he's eighth. And I'm like, oh, is that just going to be a little too far for him to even get on the podium? Because the Suzukis are not the fastest bike in a straight line, but they're not the slowest bike in a straight line. But I thought, well, we'll have to keep an eye on where Mir is in eighth, and that's something that we were going to have to watch in the race. Petrucci ninth, Binder 10th, then you had Nakagami and Oliveira.
Yeah, so you had mentioned that Morbidelli had gotten 7/10, 2/10 on Quartararo. I think you saw the 0.7 there.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, but 2/10. But it was close, though.
You do math on the fly. Look what happens to you.
But just say the top 11 all within a second of each other. I mean, that's still pretty freaking close. That's nuts, right?
Oh, yeah, it's amazingly close. I mean, it was Morbidelli was pumped. I was glad to see it. I mean, he got something finally for his efforts. So he got a Tissot watch, which is great. Quartararo was like, what's Quartararo going to do with this? Because usually, you know, Quartararo's MO, at least in Spain and at least at the Jerez, was I'm on pole and I'm going to lead and I'm going to win. So it was going to be interesting to see how the race is going to pan out because it was setting up nicely, at least from qualifying. A lot of intrigue to what was going to happen.
Yep. So before we get started with the race, I did have a note here because I got it to work this weekend because I didn't even know. Just in case anybody's out there with this, the MotoGP app, which is now free, I remember back in the day they used to charge like $26 a year for that stupid thing. But it's free, and I got it on my Apple TV now, which means that I don't have
That's how I watch it.
Yeah, I don't have to hook up my computer to my TV anymore, my laptop. The app is wonderful. I have to say it works really well, better than the website actually, which is strange. And you can go into the app and actually turn it to the no spoiler version so they don't just pop up something as soon as you log in. That Kudos to MotoGP. I just wanted to get that out there that the app is wonderful. It works, and they've put a lot of smart ideas into it so far, and it just works, Jim. Happy with that.
I have one complaint about it.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if this happens to you, but this happens to me. If anybody's got a solution for it, tell me. Email me. Hit me on Twitter. When I go to it and I start the app, and a lot of times I don't get to watch qualifying because it's at the wrong time for me in the morning here in the East Coast. But I'll come to it and I go look, and no spoiler because that's how it's set, so I don't see anything I shouldn't see. I never have the race. I don't have I'll have like the free practice sessions, but there won't be any qualifying. I literally have to, only way I can get the qualifying to show up is I have to go to the settings of Apple TV and I have to tell it to restart. And as soon as it restarts, they pop in. So like that same thing happens to me when it's race morning, because when I get up, usually Moto 3 is done. Moto 2 is getting ready to go live. So I want to watch Moto 3 first because it should be posted there. Well, I can't get it. I have to go back and restart it each time. Do you have to do that to get the no spoilers in there? Or
no,
is it just me?
Mine shows up as it is. I would recommend uninstalling it and re-downloading it.
That's a good idea.
It sounds like there's a conflict going on there, and I tend to have to do that with several of my Apple TV apps. I've had similar, or not similar, but I've had funky things go on with different apps, especially like the CBS app and the Fox Sport app. That is just straight garbage. I've had to do that several times where I just have to nuke it, and then I have to turn on location settings, and it still doesn't know that I'm watching it. Oh, piece of, I'm not going to go into that. I don't need to get into that mad right now. But anyway.
You tell us how the race went. How about that?
So it starts off
something you like.
Right. So we get Jack Miller. He had a nice stoppy. If you hadn't to see it coming in to the beginning of the race, his brakes burned up. I just want to point that out. But as we get ready to start the race, we get lights out. Morbidelli got a great start. I mean, he just launched that bike off the line pretty sweet. Miller, as usual, got a great start as well. And they get off the line well. And then not very long into the race, we have...
Know who else got a really good start?
Oh,
Rins had a fantastic start because he was from way back to sixth.
Which he needed. He needed a good start.
Oh, he needed to get there. Needed to get there fast, that's for sure.
And so, unfortunately, very early in the race, we see that there's a crash. And it's Zarco and Dovi go down in the second corner. And we're like, oh, no. And Dovi's just throwing his hands up at Zarco. He's pissed. He's like, what have you done? And he's like, he was on his knees in the gravel, like looking up at the sky. Why? Why me? Why did this happen? And then we're
because
all thinking
Petrucci
like,
screwed up.
That's right. That's right. Petrucci went.
It's like you want. And we didn't know that, but it's like now. It's like you're just like, dude, go watch the video because Petrucci about tosses it, and so Zarco has to check up and folds the front.
Yep.
Sorry. And that's then, racing again. And, here it is. It's racing. It's like Moto 3, only at a different corner.
That's right. And it's like, oh, what a bummer. And man, what a bad time for Ducati to watch. Not only their guy caused the chain reaction, but then watch two of their bikes skittle out of the race and their championship leader skittlers. Not the time you want to go down. I am not even going to say Dovi is out of this championship. Have you not been watching 2020? If you said that, you have not been watching this year. He is not out of the championship. It's not even close to being out. No. If he broke his leg or something, maybe. But no, this is a long year to go still. We're halfway. Remember? We said it. All right. but it was good to see the old dog back up there in second. Valentino Rossi was running real strong. And we had a Yamaha 1-2-3. It was a very strong race for the Yamahas. Quartararo, he was behind Miller. He didn't get the greatest start, so he's behind Miller. But he was super lucky because Miller ended up running wide. And Fabio was able to sneak by. You don't want to be behind a Ducati because you're going to have to push it in the corners on the brakes. Good luck on the brakes. They're very good too. They're very good at getting out of a corner and slowing down to the corner. The middle of the corner is where they're not that great, so which is where the Yamaha is. So it's not the bike that went behind, but he was able to get around him. And then Fabio soon, he ended up catching Rossi, got around him on lap 6 to grab second. And at this point, I put my notes like, Petronas is kind of making the factory bikes look a bit silly. And I'm pretty sure there's going to be big changes coming up for the factory soon. I don't mean just for the riders. I'm talking on an organizational standpoint. They just, ever since 2015, you can't keep going back to 2015 and saying, look at us, because you've kind of gone nowhere since. So, and you've made a lot of changes, riders, personnel, everything. None of it's worked. Something's got to change philosophy-wise. Paul Espargaró at this point, though. Oh, crashed out lap three. He lost the front end. He was trying to get by Peducci, which, you know, the Ducati is very strong, the same category that the KTM is. Very high top of speed, very good front end on the brakes, and he just kind of lost the front going into turn one, and Pol went ahead and made his little, you know, tantrum stomp off into the end of the, under the sidelines.
He does have a temper, doesn't he?
Oh, he sure does.
He just shows some emotion.
Yeah, he does.
Like, you think he's Italian the way he throws arms and stomps, but not really.
He's Jekyll and Hyde, though, because whenever they just interview him or whatever, he's just this totally fun, laid-back, jokingly guy. He loves being just, like, bubbly kind of character, and he just, like, loses his shit on a track or something, man. He just puts that visor down, that monster comes out. Now, at this point, you know, as looks like Morbidelli and Quattro are kind of pull away a little bit, Miller was starting to slip back to Mir. Morbidelli had a huge moment on the front end going into, I think it was turn one there, on lap 14, and his back tire was coming off the ground and he was braking so hard, and when it came back and it snapped and went around, it kind of gave him a big wobble. He ended up dropping back, and at this point, we already had Fabio. He'd just kind of gotten by Morbidelli on the brakes. He was kind of getting away, but Rossi was still there in a second and still looking good, and change of direction. What did you say earlier? What were they worried about with the tires this weekend, Jim?
The tires were cooling off on the left-hand side. So you are going right for about 40 seconds from the lap. So the last time you make a left until you got to make the left to turn two is about 40 seconds. So that's more than enough time for the tire to cool off. Ambient air temperature was way down. It was like a 64 degrees. People had long, you know, had coats on. It was definitely cool. Plus, you got a kilometer long straightaway, so that when you come down the straightaway, that tire does nothing but want to cool off. And well, Rossi changed on that flip of direction, and he just down,
gone.
Just fast. Not enough grip.
No, it's nothing you could do about that. That bike was gone before he even realized it was. I mean,
yeah, he was playing catch up to it. Can we go back to the Morbidelli almost stoppy real quick?
Yeah.
So, he's on the brakes really, really hard. But what I thought was interesting was when he set it down, how much the bike went around and moved. It gives you an idea of how grippy the Michelin rear actually is. Because if you had done that with the Bridgestone, it wouldn't have done that.
No, you would have just slid. You would have caught it and just kind of the back and end thing, which everyone's used to. That tire grabbed hard. I mean, he's lucky he didn't crash.
Because you know they have to use the rear brake to slow themselves going down the corner because there's so much grip on the rear. So obviously Morbidelli's got the rear brake on to some extent. He lifts it off, and when he comes back down with it, the grip was so good that it just, man, he just had to let go of everything to get it to come back in, which is really phenomenal. I mean, you contrast that to like Marquez, and the bike was going, you know, what, circa 2013, where Marquez would go into a corner and the bike was left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, and it just didn't matter. It was, I mean, you know, everybody talks about it, but that's like the first evidence of it you could see on a TV that you could go, whoa, that there is some grip back there. Continue on. You're doing so good, and I'm interrupting. So
No. It gives me a break, because now I can read off my notes and kind of prepare myself to go forward. All right, so unfortunately, with Rossi going down, that's back-to-back DNFs, and his championship now is probably slipping away. But then again, 2020 has been a crazy year. We don't know. What was a big bummer, he was probably locked in to get his podium this weekend, I would assume, and this would have been the one he's been looking for, number 250. But just, again, wasn't meant to be. That's two strong races in a row he's had. Maybe he'll get this year, but, man, those are going to be harder and harder to come by, especially the talent level that's going on in MotoGP right now. At this point in the race, Fabio, he's long gone, or so we think. He's out there doing his thing, and he's looking very controlled. Miguel Oliveira, he crashed and going into turn two with about six to go. It looks like at this point the tire's not liking the conditions. Mir, who we were probably the one that we've been watching the most because they've been great on used tires all weekend. Everybody announced that the Suzuki's definitely had the pace on the tires, and there was going to be a fall off on the tires. This is the point in the race we really had to pay attention, because as Mir was catching up, he was starting to gain huge chunks on the guys in front of him, and he was running lap times even faster than the leader. Mir ends up getting by Morbidelli with two to go, and brought his teammate along with him. Renz ended up getting right by him, and a few quarters later, Suzuki ends up being there. Now they're sitting in second and third. They're double podium. Can they catch Fabio? Fabio's tires are starting to go away from him, but he just had enough to get to the end. He gets a win, redeems himself, washes away the last couple races that he just hasn't been feeling himself. Suzuki double podium. It's the first time since 2007 when Christopher Milian and John Hopkins were on the podium at Misano. And it was just another great weekend, another great race. It wasn't the battle at the front that we thought we were going to get, but I got to tell you, we're starting to see some things develop this year that are starting to show their colors to the future, especially with Juan Mir. He has made the step. He hasn't had a one-off race now. This has been like four races in a row that he is the threat. And we've almost forgotten about his teammate, which was the threat last year. And if he had not gotten hurt this year, and of course we're talking about Alex Rins, if he had not gotten hurt this year in the first round, we're probably talking Alex Rins is maybe even leading the championship at this point.
No.
No, you don't think so?
No.
Oh.
Nope. I don't think Rins is consistent enough. Mir is far more consistent than Rins is.
Well,
look at Rins' track record of previous years. Kind of strong in the beginning of the year, does pretty well, then somehow loses the plot, can't even qualify right. So I messed up shoulder or not, Rins is not winning the championship. Mir, and he's not leading it. No way. Mm-mm. No one can convince me otherwise. So.
All right.
You can argue with me all you want.
I don't need to. The results speak for themselves. If it is what it is, it is what it is. It's all hypothetical at this point, and it doesn't matter. Arguing hypotheticals gets nobody anywhere. If you've got facts.
You'll have a very Merry Christmas, right? This is why we race. This is the point of the exercise. Like the things that you don't think are going to happen. Yeah, would Rins probably be better than he was? Be better this year? Yes, it's sort of one of those years where the tire works for the Suzuki. Suzuki's got their sums right. It's very much, I think, that he would be farther up in the championship had he not had the problems with his shoulder. But I do think that Mir has made a much greater advancement on the Suzuki than what we thought was going to happen. And Mir is definitely taking advantage and racing far better. And I hate to say it, I think Mir's racecraft is actually better than Rins's. I'll put it that way.
At this point, it's hard to argue, given the latest results. But still a long season ago. Like we said, we're only halfway.
Anything is possible.
That's right.
So the true test is see what happens when we go. Well, I'll save that for later. Go on. Keep going.
All right. So that brings us to the race. So like we said, top three there. Quartararo, Mir, Rins, Franco Morbidelli finishing in fourth. Jack Miller in fifth. Pekka Bagnaia bringing home a nice solid sixth there. Taka Nakagami, another seventh place. Bertucci having one of his better races in a long time, getting eighth. Marin Vinales finishing all the way down to ninth, was never really doing anything but that. Kyle Crutchlow, busted ankle and all, was sitting there 10th. Brad Binder was sitting there in 11th. The KTMs, this was not their track, that's for sure. Had another tough weekend. Aleix Espargaró, whose season has just eroded away, has been back there in 12th. Alex Marquez is actually having a better season than we thought he would, is sitting there in 13th in front of Iker Lecuona and Tito Roar Bat, finishing out your points finishers, which brings us down to the championship, which is changing every week. Fabio Quartararo, back into first place, has an 8-point lead over Juan Mir, who is just in front of Matt Vinales, another 10 points behind. Andrea Dovizioso, he's at 84 points. So you see how fast he dropped back. But that's one weekend. He went from first to fourth. That can easily happen again in another weekend should Quartararo go down or Mir go down. It's very topsy-turvy. Franco Morbidelli.
Maybe Mir and Quartararo will go down together in a heap.
Right. And then Vinales has another 9th place finish. Poof. All of a sudden, it's just right back to where we were. Who knows? Franco Morbidelli is now sitting on 5th, Jack Miller in 6th, Taka Nakagami in 7th, Alex Rins is in 8th, Miguel Oliveira in 9th, and Brad Binder sits in 10th. Brad's probably out of it. Brad is 50 points back, but then again, if he gets two race wins and everybody else kind of sucks in front of him, I'm not going to rule anything out at this point, Jim.
No. Let's go into some ifs, buts, and hypotheticals.
All right.
The long race, we are now going to have a week off. And then we're going to have three races back-to-back again. Okay, so that's going to give us Le Mans. So we're going to France. We're going to northern France. Then we're going to go to Aragon in Spain.
Ooh, actually, we're actually not really going to get a week off because we have testing in Aragon this week coming up.
All right. Well,
not in the Aragon. Excuse me. Portimao. Testing in Portimao this week.
Now that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, now that should be interesting.
So Le Mans is a tricky track anyway. Everybody crashes at the first chicane. There's been a ton of rubber laid down from a 24-hour race, so that's going to be interesting in itself. And Here's how this championship is going to be decided. Who, if it rains, and we're talking about a great possibility of having rain at Le Mans, having a good possibility at rain at, say, maybe Portimao or maybe at Valencia for the final three races. Who's a good rain rider? That's the question.
Mark Marquez.
Who's going to be able to, you know? I mean, this is where the championship is going to be decided. It's going to be decided by, like, really who can ride in the rain.
Ooh, I mean, let's see.
You know, Le Mans. If you want people to crash, Le Mans is going to be the place. Plus, it's supposed to be super cold. We've seen what happens in cold with the Michelin right now. There's no grip on the front. So you could easily see Mir crashing. I could easily see Quartararo crashing, right? Okay, that's a possibility. You know, Binder keeps on two wheels, he gains some points. We go to Aragon. I would not put Aragon past Brad Binder winning. He's won there before in Moto2. He does well at that track, and it's kind of Bruneau-esque, if you will. It's got a big long straightaway that you kind of need. It's got some flow at the beginning. It's kind of uphill, a little downhill. I wouldn't put Binder past Binder to win both of those races at Aragon, if you want to get into hypotheticals. So this thing is so far from being over. It is the highest level of drama we have seen. I don't know. Where do you want to go back to? I would say maybe the Rainy Schwantz days.
I would say if you want to look at recent history, maybe 2016 in the beginning when we had nine race winners that year.
Yeah.
I mean, even Jack Miller, don't forget, he won his first race in the rain.
Did Ducatis go well in the rain?
Yeah.
Matt Oxley said it, and when he said it, like, hey, it's all about who can ride in the rain and who can get their bike set up for the rain. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. Like, how many times have we seen the finals in Valencia and whatnot be interrupted by rain? More often than not, it's kind of rainy, cold, nasty kind of weekends. So, and it's going to be even later. It's even farther into November than we usually are.
I mean, we may have to even talk about races being delayed because of snow. We're going so late in the year.
Reddit S-word?
It's going to be interesting, and I think we're going to have to see Michelin pull out some different tires. We're going into uncharted territory, right? Far as the end of this year, tracks, temperatures, everything else, we're really going to have to see. So, but Jim, we got to wrap it up because I got to get dinner going, and it's just getting there. The time I said it was dinner was 7 o'clock, and it's 6:55, so on the roll. Oof. Here.
Out of here.
Alrighty. So remember, folks, don't forget, you can email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. It goes to all of the hosts. Most times you'll get at least one or two of us responding, if not everyone responding, or if we put it on the show, if we like it, it brings a little bit of conversation to the show. We're on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/motopod. That's the Motopod fan page. You can go over there and like the page if you wish. And we're also on Twitter @moto_pod. You can follow us there for news, announcements, and general motorcycle banter. Speaking of Twitter, I am there and on Instagram. My username there will be @SkylarV28. Jim, where can people find you?
@MotoRGV, Instagram and Twitter.
All right, well, that's another show. Halfway point was not the halfway point. Once again, we're about 20 minutes over that halfway point. That's okay.
When aren't we? When aren't we?
This is true. But no, another great week, another great weekend. We will have a week off as well, so we can do a little reset. But we will be back, and we'll be covering the race of the month. Jim, until then, take it easy, man.
Keep safe, bro.